coming to you live. It's In the Know with Mo. And now, here's your host, Mo Vella.
Hey, everybody. So nice to have you with us this week. Wow, what a show we have for you today. I'm so excited to learn from, be inspired by, and really just be enlightened by Gail Zotz. She'll be with us in just a couple of minutes. As we do every week at In the Know with Mo, we start with my moment of truth. And this week, as much as I was bopping to the music and laughing and smiling as I try to do every single second I can, I'm going to get serious for a second because I have COVID and I'm doing the podcast live and the radio show with COVID. And I said to Mark Grimaldi, my incredible producer, who I couldn't do this without, and I love him and thank him. But I just want to tell you all, I have COVID because I think it's very important for us to all continue to remind one another, this thing is real. I am vaccinated twice. I am boosted. I wear a mask continuously. I stay 6 feet away from people. But I still got it. This is a contagious strain, this Omicron. I am very blessed. The universe is shining forth on me. I have nothing but a little bit of a runny nose and I sneeze every 6 hours. So you know what? I'm very grateful, but I don't want to make light of this because if I can get it, you can get it. And that's what I wanted to say today in the moment of truth is the truth is this thing is real. I never dreamed I was going to have it. I'm grateful that I don't have any symptoms to speak of, but some people are on a ventilator. And so I just want to remind everybody watching and listening today, please, please, let's all stay vigilant. Let's all stay committed to the premise that we care about one another and that we love each other enough to continue to stay quarantined the way I am. I am not going to put anybody at risk. It's not worth it. And please be cognizant that this life and this journey is much more about just each of us. So on that note, I'm going to put the smile back on because that's how I feel in my heart. And we're going to bring in my incredible guest. I can't wait to get to know her. I think you are all going to feel the same way I do at the end of this, which is, wow, that's probably one of the words that's going to come to your mind in the next hour. Wow. So let's get started with Gail Zotz. Gail is the CEO of WiseCare, but she, more than that, she's a value-based healthcare expert. I want to know what the hell that means. So that is kind of what we're doing today. We're talking healthcare, but in a very different way, because Gail is so much more than a healthcare expert. I want to know how she became one. And I think when we hear how she became one, we're all going to be inspired by her resiliency. She's also a cancer and domestic abuse survivor. And so I decided when we chose to have Gail as our guest today, that I wanted to make this show much more than just about healthcare. I just think we would be really wasting the chance for all of us to be empowered, educated, inspired, and enlightened by Gail if we didn't discuss all the aspects of her journey. So, Gail, welcome. Oh, my God.
Thank you. I feel so cool because you have me on.
Oh, you're so sweet. And we have a mutual friend in Jody Trapazzo, right?
Yeah, one of the fine people.
Isn't he amazing? Yeah, we go back, 1995. Can you imagine?
So, when you were in high school, right?
Yes, we were. Middle school, Gail. Middle school. Let's get it right. Well, you know, I would be remiss if I did not tell you how much I love your headpiece.
Thank you.
I just think it's amazing. Is it a little beanie?
I got the beanie look going. I started doing it during the beginning of lockdown, and I found it makes people smile.
It does. And it made me smile, and it's got hearts on it. So what a great way to start our time together. So listen, what we do here at In the Know with Mo is I always like to focus on the humanity of a topic, right? Because much more than a cancer survivor or domestic abuse survivor or a healthcare expert, you're Gail, And I know my audience, and I feel the same way. We want to know who Gail is. So who the hell is this Gail Fox, right? So let's go back to the beginning. So I understand, I hope I understand correctly, that you were born into a set of parents that were gave you an example of activism, I think, from a very young age. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I think it really comes full circle in your life, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's the best word, activism, right? They marched for civil rights, but even before me. My mother was president of the local Tay Sachs Foundation, which is, you know, it's a permanent genetic disorder. And she just showed about what's involved in getting community involved. We had community activism from the house. She had her own business in the garage doing market research. And, you know, she really showed me that we can do both, that we need to do both, that it's our responsibility to be active members of the community. And I just took that forward. So I was 15, and there was a camp for economically underprivileged children that people had wanted to do for 5 years. Yeah. And adults were doing it. And I said, well, I'll do it. They said, don't be ridiculous. We need money. We need
a camp counselor?
So we created this camp called Camp for Happy Days for economically underprivileged kids from inner city Philadelphia. We brought them up to the mountains and gave them a free camp experience. All the counselors donated their time. At 15, I ran a phone bank so we could raise all the money. And we needed to meet with the kids. So there I met Gerson Green, who was the founder of Head Start. He became my first mentor. Wow. He was in his 60s. I was 15. And nice. I would come into the office and we would work and learn and really just like guided me on how activism is like part of being a full life, you know? And so it became, because it was my entire life, it was just the way we do things. We care about other people. We become involved. I mean, my mother was super involved in the ERA, and I was thinking about this today. I'm like, what happened to that? Equal rights for women to be like.
Well, I think it's still there, but it kind of takes another name now, right? In a different form. But so I want to go back to something. First of all, let me clarify. Sure. You're saying that at the age of 15, you were exposed and met the founder of the Head Start program, in the Head Start program in the education system?
Yeah, Head Start that Gerson Green had worked for every president for years as an activist, and had, you know, you think about how these programs started.
Yeah.
And it's so essential even today. I mean, 20% of our kids are food insecure, which means they don't know where at least one meal is coming from.
Oh, God. That turns my stomach, by the way. That right there is one of the most disgusting facts that just rocks my soul.
Right.
Let's just think about that for 1 second before we move on.
Yeah.
That children in the United States, this amazing country, 20% of them don't really know where most of their meals are going to come from.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just unfathomable to me. But anyway, I digress. But, what an impact at 15. My God, that had to just like.
Can you imagine?
I can't, honestly, because it had to like just, you know, envelop you in a way that clearly has impacted and permeated the rest of your journey.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Wow, amazing. You know what? I don't want to digress, but I do want to point this out. You know, before we went on air, we were talking about my 7% being Jewish, and we were joking with each other, right? And I want to point this out because you just raised this issue that your mother, your parents, I think, who were Jewish or are Jewish if they're still with us, they were marching for civil rights. And I just want to point this out because I think a lot of times people just kind of skim right over this. But there were a lot of Jews in the United States during the civil rights era that marched for civil rights. I remember when I worked with Joe Lieberman in the for vice presidential campaign and his mom, Marsha, and how Senator Lieberman, when he was young, marched in Selma, you know, and it just took me there. And I wanted to point this out because I think too many times people don't realize that there was a lot of coherence, right, and cohesion among people who had experience, like the Jewish community, who's been exiled everywhere they went, right, in history. And so they were there with the African-American community and other minorities, and always have been. So look, we are, I can't believe how fast this goes. Oh my God, we're already to our first break. And by the way, Gail, I am still working on getting better at my outros, getting us to the break. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started with Gail Zott. See you in a second. Welcome back to In the Know with Mo. I'm Mo Bella, your host. It's so good to have all of you with us. Yes, we do laugh during the break, as you could see. And you know, we were just joking, Gail Zotz and I, about maybe we should create a new game at In the Know with Mo, is what are they talking about during the break? Because all you can see is our facial reactions and us acting silly. But anyway, back on a little bit more of a serious note, because I want to get into Gail's, you know, we were just talking about where her activism started, and we're going to get to healthcare in a minute and how she became a healthcare expert, and why, frankly. But I think it was important to understand her, the foundation of her being from her childhood and being the product of activists. And seeing activism as a way of life, frankly, and an integral part of her journey since her youth. So, Gail, we got through that, and you were exposed to some amazing figures in the education space, in the childhood development space, obviously in healthcare. But before we get any further on healthcare, I actually want to go and I want to touch on something I'm sure traumatizing, painful, but I have this feeling, knowing you for now 22 minutes, that you found something powerful from the trauma. So I'm talking, of course, about your domestic abuse. So would you share with us whatever you're willing to share? I would never want you to share anything you're not comfortable sharing, but In the Know with Mo is about all of us learning from each other and all of us growing as a result of our common humanity. And so to me, I would love to hear whatever it is you could share with us about what you experienced as the victim of domestic abuse. I know you had children, and I would love to talk about that whole experience. And most importantly, before we finish this segment, what the heck did you learn from that? And how did it inform you? And as strange as it sounds, how did it empower you?
No, it's, I mean, that's the right question. I believe that we all make our decisions in the challenges that we have in life on who we are and who we become as a result of it. And I know there are people who become angry and guarded and, you know, close in. And I really feel like my challenges have been gifts because they've enabled me to open up, you know, and become more like we were. So my ex-husband had served, and when my there's a lot of tie between mental illness, which I'm a very big advocate of. I've been working on that for years and years, and violence. And he just one day thought that the kids were terrorists and that we should not be here. And so the last incident, my youngest was an infant. My one above her was, I have four, was a year and a half. And he put her into a football hold. And he like rammed into her with her head into me, who had just had my fourth back surgery. So it was like pushing me right and falling down. And I reached and I called the police. And he was like running for 2 weeks. And he ended up being held without bail. And then after 6 months, pled not guilty by reason of insanity, was transferred to a psychiatric for the criminally insane. But then they had an overbed. They had too many people. So without victim notification, they had a private hearing and released him with 6 days' notice. So people came into the house and they said, don't you run away. and CPS came in and said, run, run. You have custody of the kids. Take them and get out. And so with 6 days notice, which is not easy to have funds and all of that, I packed the kids into a truck. We went to Cape Cod, actually, in the middle of winter, Massachusetts. I said, if we're going to be in hiding, let's be by the ocean. I had burner phones, the whole deal, like in order to not be traced. Everything had to be some kind of cash. So there we are, no contact with any like family or support. And I am there with four children under the age of 9. And I had just had a 3-level fusion on my back.
Oh, my Lord.
Right. So like picking up and doing. And we had enough resources for 6 months. And there I am in 6 months with the kids. I mean, they couldn't go to school because we couldn't register them. I couldn't get my medication. A perfect tie-in in healthcare in terms of what I learned is that I went to the hospital, the ER, to get my medication because I didn't have it now that we were in hiding. And they said, if you need medication, whatever it is, because you can't physically take care of your children, then we need to take your children. And they said, so do you think you can manage? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And a big part of what I learned is that as it went on, we went into poverty, total poverty. And I had not experienced abject poverty like that. To the level of, Mo, I'm standing there at the grocery store and I, for an hour with four kids, like trying to decide, do I get diapers or milk? Because I could not afford both. You know, or how do I go to get the special, like where they would help if I couldn't put gas in the car? And how, like, I remember it's pouring rain and I'm carrying little kids because it was like a shoe distribution, but I didn't have jackets for them also, you know, and I just learned so much when you don't know what we were talking about before, when you don't know where your next meal is coming from for your children, that is all that matters.
Yeah.
And so we talk about social determinants and all of these things that come from a higher level, but the day to day of
the reality
of living in poverty and parenting, it is a totally different path.
And what did you learn about yourself in that? Because that had to be, I mean, I understand that you're not sitting there going, oh, self-discovery. I can't feed my children. Let me focus on, I understand that. But in hindsight, right? In retrospect, what did you learn about yourself? Because,
you know, so one of the first things is, even before you get into sort of what I call my guide to surviving almost anything, before you do anything, is believing that you don't really have a choice. So I know that people drink and do drugs and leave their kids and do all kinds of things, but I felt that I had these four humans completely dependent and responsible on me. And so I had to get up every day and do whatever it took every single day, and then how to show up. And the other really big thing is that all we have at the end of it is who we are. Yeah. So one of my kids just wrote in an essay contest, who do you most admire? It was so nice. And she was talking about, while we were there, I was offered an enormous deal. I was doing M&A work. I was offered an enormous deal to be like half owner of a company. I'll make it really short. At the very end, and it was a $300 million deal, they wanted me to commit fraud. And I said, I can't do it. So I didn't go. We ended up homeless. But at the meeting that I was supposed to be at the Oberoi in Mumbai, there was a terrorist attack. And the Americans were killed. So
your life was spared. Wow. Right. So you know what that tells me? You're supposed to be here, right? We'll be right back with Gail Zotz. We're going to pick up right there. So much more to talk about. I can't wait. It's riveting. And she's such an inspiration. Stay with us. Well, Mark Grimaldi, my producer, continues to surprise me with our music and coming out of our breaks. So I'm just going to keep surprising him by dancing. So move over, Ellen. You're not the only one that can dance, Ellen. Welcome back to In the Know with Mo. I'm Mo Vetla, your host, and it's so wonderful to have all of you with us. My guest this week is Gail Zotz, healthcare expert, inspiration, motivation, a sister put on the earth to teach us all. I can tell you that I am learning so much from her story. So Gail, before we went to break, we were talking about you, your life being homeless with your four children in their youth. And you said something during the break I wanted to share with our viewers and listeners, because you said that when you were homeless, you were just happy because you had a car. And that really just struck me, because it just reminded me that even in the worst of times, when you were rock bottom because of being a victim of domestic abuse, felony domestic abuse, I might add, that you still were grateful. And I just, that's what I take from that, that, you know, even in the worst of times, I think we can still be grateful, because I think gratitude is, you know, written all over your eyes. I can just, in that smile, look at you. So I want to move, unfortunately, from this horrific victimization, and, you know, and you clearly have demonstrated to yourself, your children, and the world that you are the epitome of survivor, and you've redefined resiliency, because look at you. And then you go now and walk us through, you go from all of that, you get out of that mess, and then you get cancer?
Yeah. So remember, like, so my back, I had the surgeries,
yeah, the fusions,
and
yeah.
So we moved, we were going from a lot of city to city, and we ended up in Minnesota, and I kept losing my ability to walk, and I'm dependent more and more and more in a wheelchair, and I'm getting sicker and sicker, and they say they've tested me for everything. Labor Day weekend 5 years ago, I end up in the hospital, and they want to send me to hospice.
5 years
ago? They said 5 years ago, Labor Day weekend. They said, we don't know what's wrong with you, but clearly, like, you're losing all of your abilities. Take this time to write letters to your children, do videos if you can.
Oh, my God.
So I'm in healthcare. So I'm sitting in the bed, and I said, I did a sit-in, which was good. I had done them back in college, so I was prepared. So I said, no, I'm not getting out of the bed. So they bring in a psychiatrist for an hour to get me to accept my situation. And I said, no, not accepting it. So they bring in security, pushing a wheelchair, saying, we need you to get into it. I said, no, you can't make me. And after 6 days, they had a bed utilization person say, get the person off the bed. So my winning ticket was to the basement of a nursing home with mold coming down from the ceiling in isolation, the youngest person there by a decade. And I'm legally blind. I'm in an electric wheelchair. I can't do any of my basic functions. I can't eat for over 2 years, nothing but liquid nutrition. And I get a call. I have all these tests. I get a call from scheduling at the hospital that says, we found you. The next available oncologist tomorrow. I said, oncologist? Does that mean I have cancer?
Oh, my Lord.
No one told you?
Oh, my God.
The next day, with my palliative team and my oncology team, each one had a doctor, a nurse, and a social worker. So 6 people. And I said, here's the deal. I'm in healthcare. I will not Google what you say. I will not ask my colleagues for second opinions. I will do every single thing you recommend. But you need to be on board that I'm going to survive this. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So remember, blind, in an electric wheelchair. I mean, wearing adult diapers, let's be honest. I was sick, 10 months of weekly chemotherapy, the most amount of radiation you can get. The 50 surgeries all told, 3 of them were over 15 hours. And I hadn't walked in years. And then they got the cancer. Amazing, amazing people. My last chemo was connected to mustard gas. I mean, it was like, I didn't even know people didn't survive the treatment. I'm there on the floor, like screaming, and I'm alone, right? No caregiver, no spouse, no sibling, no parent, no adult child. Day in and day out, I'm looking at this chair because there's two chairs in every office, right? One for the patient and one for the caregiver.
Yeah.
And I kept looking at it and I said, it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm going to get through this so that other people don't have to have an empty chair. Mm. And it was, right? Mm. It doesn't have to be this hard. And between my children and that vision of that I could, that I had so much more to do, it is what got me through day in and day out.
Wow. And so wait, I have to stop you right there because I'm so, I'm just rattled. So I really want to better understand, and I know my audience does too, what was that in you? I get it. Yes, I want to do this so that, you know, nobody else has to go through this. Amazing, amazing thought process, amazing soulful spirit you have. But can you go with a little, can you help us better understand, like, what is that inside you? Where did that come from? Like, how do you find that in you, you know, in yourself?
And what a great question, right? Because I hold that we all can, that we all have.
I believe we can, but I mean, we need guidance.
So I'll give you my how to survive almost anything.
Okay.
Okay. So show up. Honestly, let's be honest. That's 98% of
the things. So in other words, be present.
Showing up, right? Showing up, doing whatever is in front of you. Gotcha. And then doing the next right thing. Because almost all the time, we know the very next right thing to do, right? You don't know what to do in 10 years, 5 years, maybe in 10 hours. But the very next right thing in front of you, be kind to the person in front of you. Be honest. Do the hard phone call that you don't want to make. Mm. Then find joy. And find it, right? Because it's always there.
I agree with you.
We need to make it active. You go
God, I love you. I love you. I love you. You're using words and lessons that I have believed in for so many years, right? But you have the real life experience to back it up, right? And let me just say this to our audience, because something I believe so fervently in, which is every one of us, you, me, everyone listening and watching, every human on the face of the planet has suffered trauma. And I know you agree with me on this. No, we're not suggesting your trauma is any worse than anybody else's.
Not at all.
Or any better, or right? It's your trauma. I've had my trauma, right? I'm very open about my traumas in my life. But would you agree with me? This is something I'm writing in my next book. I really believe the difference between each of us as human beings is where we are in the healing process, which is basically what you said by saying, find joy, right? Because if you choose to heal, right? And what you just described, be present, right? Do the right next thing and find joy, in my opinion, defines a very much a part of the healing process. Do you agree?
Yes, and dance often.
And laugh loudly, right?
Love fiercely, laugh loudly, right? So first of all, we are more than the total of our traumas.
Yes. Oh,
and that has to be the first decision. Yep. That I am informed by my traumas. Who do I become from my traumas? But that is not all I am. That is not all you are. That is not all anybody your audience is, right? We choose what to take with us and what to leave behind.
Yeah.
And people do bad things. And you can look for bad people and you'll find them every day.
They're a dime a dozen, unfortunately. Right?
Or you can look for joy and look for compassion and look for life and show up in your own power with love.
Oh my God, Gail Zot. Like, if I wasn't gay and you were single and, you know, if, right?
I am what, single. But.
What an incredible, incredible inspiration you are. I don't even want to go to break, but we have to. But I can't wait till we get back because we're going to talk about healthcare. I promise we are. But my goodness gracious, I'm so glad we waited until the end because this has been so touching. So I can't wait. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back. I have to say, to have Gail Zotz as my guest has, you know how I am about getting choked up on the show, and I haven't gotten choked up in a long time, and I'm trying to avoid it today because I'm very touched by her, her energy, her story, I'm fighting back the tears, but they're tears of joy, to be honest with you, because she's just reminding me of so many incredible things, to just be grateful, all of us, just to be grateful. We're all above ground, number one. We're breathing. And by the way, Gail, I hope you don't mind, but I announced I have COVID. She has COVID right now too. So we're coming to everybody, both with that little bit of a battle, but gratefully, I think we're both feeling really good and relatively non-symptomatic. We've got to talk about healthcare, but here's the deal. I'm not done talking to you. We just have so much more we've got to talk about because
whatever you want.
In the break, we were going over things that I really want to share with our audience, but we've got to talk about healthcare with you because I know that's your passion too. So we're going to do that only if you promise you're going to come back and we're going to talk about survivorship, resiliency, and we're going to keep going on all of those topics because there's too many lessons to be taught. Too many. Will you come back?
I would love to.
Okay. Okay. Absolutely. Then I will talk about healthcare only on those grounds.
100%.
So you had cancer, you go through all of this nightmare, and clearly it exposed you to the healthcare system. So what, first of all, you call yourself a value-based healthcare expert. What is that? And what is that? Is it that versus what? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, is it that versus our current system?
Right. So our current system is called fee-for-service. Fee-for-service. It works as a transaction. If you break an arm, you slip on the sidewalk, you break your arm, you go to the doctor, and they get paid a transactional fee for fixing your arm.
Okay.
Okay. And that's all of healthcare has been paid this way in the US. Now think about it. If the hospital and the doctors and everybody else are only paid for what I call an episode of sickness, right? Then there is no motivation for anybody to fix the sidewalk that people keep falling on and breaking their arm. Right? Value-based care, right? Value-based care says we're going to reimburse you to keep the sidewalk fixed. And we're going to do it by holding you accountable or responsible for a panel of patients. That's why it's called population health. So instead of you being responsible as a doctor, hospital, nurse, or just fixing the arm, you're now responsible for the health of all of the people that are assigned to you who walk on that sidewalk. So suddenly we'll start seeing fixed sidewalks. CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has three big goals with value-based contracting. One is the patient experience, improving that. Another is improving the health of an entire population. And the third is lowering costs, right? The total cost of care. And then they have added, particularly with the new administration, that the real goal above that, which has not been realized, is health equity. And Health Equity says, not only do you fix a sidewalk that's broken in a nice neighborhood where there's a lot of money, you fix every sidewalk.
Yeah.
And if you don't fix it because there's none there, you build it. And you make sure that that sidewalk is accessible to everybody.
Is there a wellness and preventative aspect to this value-based?
Yes, I
feel like it's in there somewhere.
100%, because if you're not paid for the sickness and instead you're paid the same amount if people are healthy or not, your incentive, your financial incentive is to keep people well. And so, the 80-90% of health that happens outside of the clinic, called social determinants often, which is food insecurity and safety and housing and clothes, all of that can happen in the home because now everybody has an incentive for it to happen. Telehealth has been born because of this idea of what we can do outside of the clinic.
Now, do studies show that value-based healthcare services and platforms and performances, do the studies and the data show that it works, it's working, that it's favorable to the current system?
Yeah, so accountable care organizations, which are early models of these, have saved hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in costs.
Interesting.
The costs can definitely be saved. The patient experience, the question that the current administration has put on, rightly so, is how do we do this for everybody? Because the numbers still show that whether it's because of your race or your ethnicity or your sexual orientation or being in a rural area, that you're still being left behind. And so the goal now, which I am sure we can do, it's the goal is to get those sidewalks in every neighborhood and move it so that this becomes the way healthcare is delivered, which is goal towards doing that in the next 8 years.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Okay. So I have so many questions because
go right ahead.
So interesting. And I don't think, I hope I'm not the only one. I'm not as knowledgeable on this as I should be. And you're really enlightening me and educating me. And I think this is why I do this podcast and the radio show, is because I think everyone assumes we all just know. We don't. You know what I'm saying? A couple of weeks ago, we had an economist on, and I said, you don't want to know something? I bet you everyone listening thinks they know what inflation means. We don't know what the hell inflation means. You know what I'm saying? Like, I went to law school because there was no math or science. No, you know, that includes healthcare. So, pardon my very primary, I guess, first grade questions. But so, okay. So the Biden administration, I keep hearing you say, it seems like they're moving toward a value-based healthcare system.
Yes, 100%.
Was that part of the Affordable Care Act? Was that in the Affordable Care? It was.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Affordable Care Act created, there's, you know, a lot of plus in the other stuff, but they created something called CMMI, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicare Innovation.
Oh.
And Congress gave, therefore, CMS through CMMI an ability to allocate money for innovative alternative payment models.
Oh, wow.
And so that vehicle has been what we in the country have all built. That is the foundation of how we have started to move to value-based contracting. And I'll tell you, both sides of the aisle agree on this, because during the former administration, they created a direct contracting entity, which, without getting into the details, was taking this idea from CMMI and growing it more, not less.
Oh.
And so, right? And so you have to wonder, if both sides of the aisle agree on something.
Well, some people would call that a miracle.
It is value. I bring you the miracle. It is value-based contracting.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, on a serious note, and to your point, if we've got both sides agreeing on something, I, for one, that sure gets my attention, because that means, my goodness, maybe we're on to something, right? And so I am just so grateful to you for coming on here We're going to have you back. We're going to have you back. There's so much more to talk about just your humanity, your life experiences, and what we can all learn from you because of those. More importantly, I also want to have you back because I think there are a lot of life lessons that we can discuss, right? Because so many things, you said something that will stay with me the rest of my life. You view your challenges have been gifts, you said. My challenges have been gifts. And I say that in a very different way, but when you said it, it really just really struck me. And we're down to our last minute together, and I just want to take it to thank you from the bottom of my heart for making yourself vulnerable. Because I think in making ourselves vulnerable and sharing our life experiences and our stories, even when they have trauma involved, is how we inspire and we motivate and we enlighten and we educate one another. And you have done all of those things for me and for us today, Gail. And I'm my heartfelt gratitude. And I'm so excited to tell you that what we were discussing before we went live, I now remember. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asher, Malachi Elyon. And I will leave you with that beautiful song. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for being such an awesome soul.
Oh, thank you.